Today on the Fear Me Out podcast, I'm pleased to welcome Larry Thornton onto the show. Larry is an artist, an entrepreneur, and a leader. He grew up in segregated Montgomery, Alabama. He worked his way up from a sign painter to advertising manager at Coca-Cola in Birmingham, and then became the first African-American to open a McDonald's franchise in Birmingham. He eventually opened multiple stores and created Thornton Enterprises. His book, Why Not Win? A Reflection on a 50-Year Journey from the Segregated South to America's Boardroom and What It Teaches Us All, was published in 2019. Larry is an inspiration for people of all walks of life, and he founded the Why Not Win Institute to make leadership development accessible. There are two basic motivating forces, fear and love. When we're afraid, we pull back from life. When we're in love, we open up to all that life has to offer with passion, excitement, and acceptance.
Coming to you from our studio in Santa Barbara, California, this is the Fear Me Out podcast. We're not your typical self-help program. Our show takes a deep dive into those psychological issues that affect us on a daily basis. We hope to shift your perspective and have you experiencing emotions differently. Now, Dr. Dana Saperstein.
Welcome to the Fear Me Out podcast. Today, I have the pleasure of interviewing Larry Thornton. Larry is an artist and an entrepreneur and a leader. He's an author and he's quite inspirational. I read a lot about him before having him on the show. And I'm really impressed, Larry, by everything that you stand for and everything that you do. So what I'd love you to do, if it's okay, is just to tell us a little about who Larry is and your beginnings and kind of go through your life, if that's okay with you.
That sounds great. Well, listen, thank you so much for having me on. I so enjoy taking any opportunity to make life better for somebody else. I've looked over your accomplishments and, you know, we're grateful. We feel good about them, but we don't want to enjoy them all to ourselves.
Right.
Particularly when there are pathways that, in my mind, seem to be simple enough that if we were to capture those rudiments of thought, processes of thinking, personal disciplines, and that's all that the book was about, was to capture those so as to leave something of a Hansel and Gretel type thing, some breadcrumbs as to how people can follow in order to have a much more fulfilling and rich life.
Well, that's fantastic.
I would say that everything was fairly normal for me of a typical poor kid in Montgomery, Alabama. But then things became very real in the ninth grade. I think most of your listeners would probably know that Brown versus Board of Education, that landmark ruling, Topeka, Kansas, 1954.
Right.
But the southern states, now that was a 9-0 decision by the Supreme Court, an all-white male justice declared that separate but equals was inherently unequal. But the southern states would not move until another 12 to 13 years beyond that. And when they opened up in Alabama, there I was, one of six Black students to attend this otherwise all-white school. The first grade, interesting times.
How old were you at this time, Larry?
So I skipped the first grade. So here I am, 12 years old in the ninth grade.
Wow.
One of six Black students. And you have these tremendous messages of inferiority kind of coming at you every day. I remember Dr. King being killed later in that same school year. And I never could calibrate the sad, somber tone in our community that night. My mom crying, my dad visibly different, shaken. So I knew something significant had happened, though I couldn't fully appreciate Dr. King and his work. But getting to school, Dana, the next day and exiting the school bus into this joyous, jubilant, kind of a celebratory atmosphere was very difficult for this kid to calibrate.
Oh, I can't even imagine.
Yeah. I will tell you that going to Goodwin Junior High School was certainly not the first time that I realized that I was Black, but it was clearly the first time that I realized that being Black made a difference. And that was challenging in and of itself. And I remember turning off to school, not doing very well academically, going on to Robert E. Lee High School in Montgomery, and continued those failings all the way through high school. I will tell you that as sad as it sounds, but it's true. I eventually graduated in summer school, not with my class. And I said this just the other day, Dana, that had there been a category in our yearbook at Robert E. Lee that identified the most unlikely person to succeed at anything in life, my photograph would have been next to that. Isn't it amazing what we can do when we can get past our past failings? We all have chapters in our lives that we wouldn't wish to have read out loud, but there's no need to have those to hold us up if we don't allow our past missteps to define us.
So Larry, where do you think you found your inspiration, considering, you know, what you had to go through as a young person? I mean, how did you overcome? I mean, it's so hard for you to imagine the amount of prejudice and disrespect that you probably had to deal with at such a young age. Yeah. How'd you handle it? What, I mean?
Well, though I didn't realize it at the time, I think a lot of it had to do with, Dana, being able to leave a home of love every day. Poor, of course, but I never doubted, and I don't know that either of my sisters or brothers ever doubted the love of our mom and our dad.
Okay.
So to leave that circumstance and to go into that horrific, challenging situation. And it got better each year. More and more blacks were coming as the years went on. And then to return after the wounds, the insults, the having been belittled, to come home to a loving circumstance. I don't know that I've ever given as much credit as I should have to my mom and my dad for having that base to come back to on a daily basis.
Right.
And as we get on into, I don't know how our time's going to run, but I will tell you that more than anything else, I learned, Dana, how to become comfortable in an uncomfortable setting. And when I look back at that exposure and then my life today, being the only black owner operator in our co-op and in the city of Birmingham, only black on the board of directors of Coca-Cola, Synovus Bank. So it's kind of like the same setting. I'm looking around the board tables at faces that do not look like mine. And had I not learned how to become comfortable in those uncomfortable settings, perhaps I might not have done so well to be able to be on these boards and to function as well as I have.
So Larry, did your parents, I'm assuming they comforted you when you were dealing with difficulty. What kind of philosophy did they impart, besides really loving you, to explain why people were so basically awful?
Yeah, it was an interesting time, Dan, and you might find it surprising that my parents didn't explain a lot.
Oh, okay.
And I was an adult before I understood why they didn't. Whenever we would go downtown, if you will, and I would go into the department stores and I'm smelling the food and I want a hamburger, and my mom would take me by the hand and lead me downstairs where black people ate. It never crossed my mind why. We would go miles and miles and miles to the black swimming pool. And they never explained why we couldn't go to that swimming pool, as we were passing sometimes 2-3 in the summers. And it was startling to me to understand why. It's kind of equal to the conversation that I have with my son, who's now 40 years old when he started to drive. In my mind, I thought that was the last conversation that I would have to have about driving etiquette and keeping your hands where you can see them. It's a shame that anybody has to do that. But I love my son and I want him to come home. Well, I have a 20-year-old son now. He's 6'7". And of course, at 19 and 20, he got the whoopity-doo haircut. So I have that same conversation all over again, because once he gets out of the car, he never stops going up until he's 6'7".
I was going to say,
considered intimidating in and of itself.
Yeah.
So it's unfortunate. And I never questioned, nor was it ever explained. But I remember this one story. I'm about 13 or 14 now. I'm feeling like a little man. And the insurance men would come around and about the community and collect insurance. And this gentleman came up and he just hit on the door real loud. Is Sarah in there? And so I'm feeling like a little man now, Dana. And I said, no, she's not, but Mrs. Thornton is. And I thought my mom was going to die. And I didn't understand why.
Right.
And so after this charade was over, I said, Mom, I was just trying to get him to respect you. He's collecting your money.
Right.
But she had a bigger concern, Dana. She knew that that same gentleman could get with the right people, find me on a baseball field as a kid, point me out. That's the one that we need to teach a lesson. And I remember going to the football games and the basketball games, and clearly they would say these words, watch out for the chain games.
Oh.
Watch out for the chain games. Wow. They had a bigger concern.
Right.
Because if she explained to me why we had to eat there and couldn't swim there, then perhaps I'll say something. And if I say something, that could mean danger for me. We have such a storied and sordid history to overcome. And I still say that we are still suffering mightily today from the social construct messaging that comes out and to and at us on a daily basis. Still to this day, women are still marginalized, perhaps more than they should, children more than they should,
right.
People of color more than they should. So it's just a real, real circumstance.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, obviously, I'm a white guy. I grew up in a Jewish family. My parents were subject to incredible anti-Semitism when they were children. My mom had her nose broken a couple times, and they grew up in a very dangerous for Jewish people neighborhood. The very first time I ever experienced that kind of racism was the very first time I went back to Toronto, where I was born. My family left when I was 5, but when I was 18, we went back. And for some odd reason, on the way home from the airport, a car stopped in front of us, and a bunch of guys got out of the car with baseball bats and started calling us, you know, a dirty Jew and this and that. And I'm looking around thinking, what planet did I just land on? I can't even believe this is happening, because I spent most of my life in Los Angeles, and it was very sort of liberal-friendly place in that regard. I was just stunned, and that was just one experience. I can't even imagine what it would be like, you know, to grow up from a little kid and having to deal with all that kind of stuff.
Having to deal with it and to have to unlearn, if you will. That's probably not even a word, but I just recall how much effort I've had to put into redirecting my thoughts about me. And I will tell you, because it's so important that you get this piece recorded.
Yes.
So what happened to change, if you will, the trajectory of my thinking about me and about life and about education? So I would repeat the failings all the way through until my senior year. In the 11th grade, your entire purpose, it seemed, was to so position your schedule to take senior English from anybody other than this lady named Miss Nichols. Miss Nichols was a World War II veteran, retiree, and she's working on her second career. This lady was the talk of Robert E. Lee. Don't take senior English from Miss Nichols. Well, I wasn't very smart. I ended up with Miss Nichols for session room and for senior English. And it's like one of those OMG moments. How would I survive Miss Nichols?
Right.
Dana, it's very important for all of us, even as adults, to be careful of what we run away from.
Okay.
Because we might be so unfortunate as to get away. Miss Nichols was the best thing that could ever have happened to me. I'm failing, having a hard time. She assigned a book for me to read. The name of the book was The Pilgrim's Progress, written by John Bunyan.
Okay.
And I was fascinated with the book. They had characters like love and charity and forgiveness and mercy, and they would act out the essence of their names. And I think it connected with the creativity. I'm an artist. You probably picked up on that.
Yes.
As well. And Ms. Nichols places a B+ on my desk. She's shocked. I'm shocked. But it was enough for her to know that there was something more to this kid.
Yeah.
Thank God for people outside of us. And I'm going to do something about it. There's no greater calling for me than to position myself to make life better for others. Our achievements, Dana, our accomplishments, our fancy titles, and you and I both have some, but they mean nothing if we can't make life better for others. Ms. Nichols invited me to her home to do some yard work, which is what my dad and I did on Saturday. She knew that. We would go to the white folks' house. We'd cut and scrape and dig and wax paper wrap cups and paper cups of water out of the back door. That's just the way it was. I can't remember much yard work, but when it was time for lunch, I do remember her inviting me in through the front door. That was virtually unheard of in the late 60s.
Right.
She had a place set for three people. She lived with her sister, and one of those places, Dana, was for me.
Wow.
The messaging without words. You know, I love the way St. Francis of Assisi says it. Go forth and preach the gospel always, and when necessary, use words. Dana, that's a powerful line.
That's for sure.
Isn't that for sure? And I've learned this. Some of the most pointed, some of the most powerful, some of the most poignant messages that we will ever deliver or receive will occur without the employment of a single word.
Right.
Ms. Nichols was saying a lot of things to me that day, but I was so busy listening to what she was doing that I had very little attention to give for what she was saying. And I remember her recapturing my listening attention when she said to me, Larry, I think you ought to go to college.
Wow.
Now, Dana, nobody had ever used my name in college in the same sentence, ever. But if Ms. Nichols thought that I was college material, because she was not about small talk, she was not frivolous, there must be merit to it. And the idea that I could be looked upon first by me as being college material, wow. I knew the Danas in the classroom. We knew where they were going. We knew where you were going. But if we could just get this kid graduated, we'd be doing fine. And I will tell you that was the turn for me to start to view me differently, to view race differently, community differently. And I found this little junior college. You know, I asked her, Ms. Nichols, what would I study in college? She says, well, you've helped me with my bulletin board all year. You can study art.
Oh,
never
okay.
heard of studying art, you know, and outside of us, thank God. And so it is incumbent, I think, for us to do the same thing for as many people as we possibly can.
Absolutely. I mean, one of the reasons I started the podcast is because as a clinical psychologist, I can only see a limited number of people in the course of my day. And I thought, you know, I've been doing this for 35 years, and people tell me all the time how much what I bring to the table has helped them. And I thought, well, I got to help as many people as I can before one day I fall out of my chair and don't get up. So,
absolutely.
You know,
have you done any writing yourself, Dana? Have you written?
Well, I my brother and I wrote a book that got published in 1990 about surviving an automobile accident. That's not really relevant to what I'm doing now. When I first started my podcast, I was doing it with a friend, and we were going to write a book akin to the podcast that we're doing. But he left the podcast about 6 months ago, and the book has kind of stayed on hold as a result of that. I'm just trying to reach as many people as I can with stories like yours. Because, you know, I only know half the story, and your story is incredibly inspirational already.
Well, it's wonderful to be in a position of giving. I would love to get in that you are a clinical psychologist. Here's something that I've always stated, and that is the way that you are is not the way that you have to be. That is one of the, in my opinion, the largest, most misunderstood axioms that I can think of, because we hear it all the time. Well, you know, man, I've been that way all of my life.
Right.
Well, you know, girl, that's just the way I am. And we never stop to think, well, is it working for you? did you realize that you could give yourself permission to abort that way of being and be a very different way and not be resigned to that old cliche of that's just the way I am. One of my favorite country songs, Merle Haggard sings The Way I Am. And he's constantly, Dana, talking about these things that he'd like to do. I could see that barber in the water and I could see the sand, but I just dream and keep on being right. The way I am. And what a sad song.
I know.
Because we don't have to keep being the way we are if it's not working.
You know, Larry, I tell people all the time, if you externalize your problems and blame your problems on the world around you, it's pretty much hopeless because you can't change the world around you. But if you're willing to take a look inside, just like you're saying, and do some work on healing yourself and understand that you do have a lot of choices that you might not necessarily be aware of, and you're not doomed to be who you are, because most of the time people don't live connected to themselves and they're not really who they are anyway. So
anyway. Isn't that the truth?
So I think
I love that.
Yeah, you and I are on the same page as far as that goes. So,
literally, well, I feel validated knowing that you have some modicum of agreement with that, because I learned early on, I'm trying to think of who stated that, but he said it this way, Dana, learn to work harder on yourself than you do on any job.
Right.
And what a powerful statement. Because if you improve you, once we improve ourselves, our attitude, our approach, our vision of life, then everybody around us gets a better you when you improve yourself.
You know, Larry, again, you're preaching to the choir here, because I think it's really important for people to recognize that that they have choice, and they have the choice to look inside, and that they can work on themselves. And they can connect with the real person that they were born to be, instead of being the person that they were conditioned to be or conditioned by the world to feel all the fears that we have, because we turn our fear into aggression and either reject ourselves or reject other people or do both. And that fear really handicaps people. I mean, you're a businessman. You probably know better than anyone that fear is what runs most business. People are terrified of making a mistake. They're going to get fired. So on and so forth. And so they live in fear. And I think that actually interferes with productivity. And that most of the time, and I've heard you talk on another podcast, how you treat your employees, and that you're a man who likes to praise and take care of people. And usually you get the best out of people when you show them love.
How about that?
It's amazing.
How about that? It shouldn't be so strange, should it, Dana?
Oh, God. You know, what seems like common sense to you and I'm not so sure, you know.
That it is as common. At least three times in the book, I say, starting in the prologue, if you can't take anything, or endure might have been a better word, you can't have anything.
Right.
The more you can take, often with grace and humility, the more you can have. And I will argue that more people who are much more qualified than I am have missed their end because they couldn't take, they didn't learn how to take the blows, the insults, the embarrassments. There will be some, the disrespect, there will be some. But don't allow that to define you. And if you were to say, Larry, how is it that you have a degree in art, yet you own 7 restaurants, you sit on 3 corporate boards where they pay you for your thinking, and you and I know individuals who have MBAs hanging on their walls and can't run a lemonade stand?
Right.
I mean, what's the difference? How is that possible that they're so qualified? I mean, I couldn't even read my profit and loss statement when I got them at first. But because you're humble, because you're grateful, because you can go and ask for help, so simple, so basic, so true, yet so misunderstood.
So how did you get from your sort of humble beginnings as a sign painter and working in advertising to working for Coca-Cola? That's a very interesting transition.
Yeah, and that is probably I'm certain that is where I learned and picked up and honed all of my business skills. So I'm teaching art at Vestavia High School,
okay,
very affluent system in Birmingham, Alabama. I would have been satisfied to teach the remainder of my days. Maybe I would have gotten into administration. But after the fourth year, you're tenured after 3 years. After the fourth year, Dana, they prorated education, the governor did in this state. And there were eight of us that lost our jobs.
Oh.
I've never lost a job ever before. And I'm thinking, not only that, if a person loses their job, usually it is because of some offense. I had nowhere in my psyche for having lost a job, and yet I had great reports and records and all.
Right, right. Didn't make sense.
Really? You can still lose your job when you perform well? Yes. And so I wrestled with that, Dana, for months and months until I came to the conclusion that they didn't take my job. They took their job. And it was up to me now to go and get my job. I'd say clearly that that is where the entrepreneurial bug bit me. And of course, it started in art. And I'm doing art. I'm painting signs, freelancing on my own. So the opportunity, and please, before we leave today, I don't know what our time is like.
Oh, we got lots of time.
Just a few moments to talk about relationships.
Please.
And so I want to paint signs. I'm not good at it, but I want to be good. So I went to this one sign. It was a Coca-Cola sign, mom and pop store. And the guy said, I don't have to pay to get that sign repainted. He said, Coca-Cola paints them free. So I'm thinking, gosh, I know Luke Cranford. I taught both of his daughters at Vestavia, the president of Coca-Cola. So I'm going to run a game. I'm going to go to Coca-Cola because I'm not going to stay to work. I just want to learn how to paint signs. I called the president. He hired me over the phone, put me in the department. When I get to Coca-Cola, nobody can paint a sign as well as I can paint a sign. So within 4 to 5 months, I'm promoted to advertising manager with an all-white report. That's a story in and of itself with a lot of legs to it.
Yeah.
But I'm not planning to stay. I wanted about 4 to 6 months, but the promotion came. It's pretty cool. Within a year, two, three, company car came. Wow, this is good, but I'm not going to get used to this because they're going to fire me again, and I'm not going through that again. The long and short of it is, even when I opened my first restaurant in 1992, I go in to submit my resignation. They won't take my resignation. So I laugh and say this, Dana, I have been leaving Coca-Cola for 43 years.
That's a great story. I love that.
And just loving it from $5 an hour to the board of directors of the largest independent bottler in the nation.
Wow.
Dana, that is a great American story.
Oh, I'll tell you. That's incredible.
It is an even more awesome African-American story.
Yeah.
And so I love getting to share what can happen if you're willing to put the work in. And I know that.
Well, how but sweet so is it that they won't let you go? That's fabulous.
Isn't that wonderful? I have not missed a check from Coca-Cola in 43 years.
Wow.
And just interesting what happens if you're willing to put the work in.
So how'd you then go into the restaurant business? Well, that's not related to certainly sign painting or working for Coca-Cola.
Sure. Do you remember the comments that I made? The way you are is not the way that you have to be.
Okay.
Dana, for the first 15 years of my career, if any opportunity ever presented itself to me outside of the artisan arena, I would always dismiss it. Without even a casual consideration, I would always say, I'm an artist. And if it didn't have anything to do with art, and then it dawned on me, who said that I can't be an artist and an entrepreneur?
Okay.
An artist and a speaker, an artist and an author. We have the book out. They're buying them 2,000 and 3,000 at the time. Montgomery City Schools just bought 3,000 books. It's all a nonprofit. Our graphic novel that we have just came out 3 months ago. We have already earned 5 book awards from this book.
Wow.
And it's just blowing my mind. And our book now is in 8 colleges and universities. And every time a college comes online, I look to the heavens and I say, Miss Nichols, are you getting this? Can you believe it? Boy, you couldn't get to read a book. Has now written a book. Two colleges teaching the book. The name of the course at East Tennessee State University is Why Not Win? Kennesaw State University. So Why Not Win? It's just awesome.
Tell us the name of the book again, because you took it away too quickly.
Okay. So the name of the book is Why Not Win? Just three simple words. I mean, let's not just be here. Let's make the best of it.
Okay.
And the way that you do that, Dana, is, first of all, understanding that we paint our own worlds, that's huge. You know, life is interesting, but only to interesting people. And most people do not think of it that way.
Okay.
Life is exciting, but only to exciting people. So get excited. It makes you an exciting person. You know, be interested. It makes you an interesting person. Life is also dull, boring, lugubrious, but only to dull, boring, and lugubrious people.
Okay.
Dana, it is also true that life is successful, but only to successful people. We paint our world with a decision to do so, and that's what we do through the Institute. From the book, we have launched the Why Not Win Institute, and we've been on nearly 40 college campuses. Wow. Preaching, if you will, the tenets of this book, and I couldn't be more pleased. In fact, if anybody told me I'd be working this hard for free at this point in my life, I would not have believed it.
But I bet.
I'm just having the time of my life. But you asked that question, and I want to hit this, if you can give me a moment. There's responsibility, and then there's opportunity. People tend to get responsibility. If you're working at Coca-Cola, you are a responsible person, probably, or
okay.
The bank.
Yeah, yeah.
But what you might not be is grateful for the opportunity. That is a defining difference, I think, on the winners in life and those who just go to work. When you go to work from a responsibility perspective, most of those people are looking at the clock at 10 o'clock saying, right. Oh my God, it's 10 o'clock. I've got 6 more hours to go. Oh, but if you go to work from an opportunistic perspective, you're looking at the clock at 2 o'clock and you're saying, my God, it's 2 o'clock already. I haven't done half the things that I wanted to get done today. That's the difference. When I'm being promoted from $5 an hour to advertising manager, my boss walks in with a box of business cards. Now, every department head had business cards. But Dana, I would dare to argue that a lot of those department heads did not appreciate from a grateful and opportunistic perspective. When I picked up one of those Coca-Cola business cards, and I'm looking at Larry D. Thornton coming from my circumstance, and my name is right next to the most recognized trademark in the world.
Yeah.
Dana, that's an opportunity. And so I came in early. I stayed late. I came in on the weekends. And before you know it, you're becoming a part of the fabric of the success of the business. We don't want to be without this guy. It's a lot simpler than we think, but people tend to miss that because they're looking at the clock. I'm not coming in early. I'm not staying late. What's in it for me? That's what you hear all the time.
Yes.
And I would argue this. Anybody who is not willing to do more than he or she is paid to do usually ain't worth whatever they're being paid.
Right.
Those are my findings.
Yeah. So you're working at Coca-Cola, and the next thing you know, you're the first guy that African-American guy who started a McDonald's in Birmingham. Is that true?
That is true.
How'd that happen?
Coca-Cola, which was a plus.
Yeah.
Relationships. Coca-Cola and McDonald's have been. So when I applied for Coca-Cola, well, let me just back up.
Okay.
So a friend of the family in Chicago, his name was Herman Petty. Herman was the first African American to own a McDonald's in the McDonald's system in 1968.
Oh, okay.
Well, I couldn't believe that in 1968 in Chicago.
Wow.
So I'm visiting Herman and we're moving around. He had three stores. And here's what struck me, Dana. I looked at all of the white patrons and it was just awe-inspiring to me supporting this black business. And Herman is encouraging me to give it a shot in the South. In the beginning, I'm saying, I'm an artist. We do it to ourselves all the time.
Right.
And I finally, I don't know why I'm having these encouraging nudges to go into traditional business. Never studied business. You don't know anything about business. What are you thinking about? Why do you want to do that? And he said, Larry, you really ought to have some opportunities popping up in the South. And I finally said this to him, Dana. I said, Herman, come on. Let's be honest. Do you really think in Birmingham, Alabama, that white people are going to come to a black-owned business? You really believe that? Here's what he said to me. Of course they will. It's not you. It's the brand.
Right, right.
If we could learn to get us out of the way more often, Dana, we'd all be better off. You know, it's not you.
Well, I mean, again, you're bringing up a really good point, Larry, which is that fear is the roadblock to most people's success.
I believe that.
Between the how you feel about yourself deep down inside and how much fear you allow to run your life, those are going to be the limiting factors that keep you from being the person that you are and being as successful as you're capable of. So it sounds like, despite the fact that you were afraid, because in your mind you're only an artist, that there were people in your life that inspired you to take a step past the fear and take the chance at failing, which is really what could have happened.
Right.
So
well, I think there's opportunity within all of us if we would get away from just the responsible plateau or platform and start to look at life more from an opportunity perspective. Right. And it's difficult to see opportunity without first seeing gratitude. So let's be grateful for the opportunities that we have, the little things that people call little, which aren't so little, our health, our good sense, our common sense. Common sense, believe it or not, ain't very common. And so when we have these, let's use our gifts. Let's unwrap our gifts. There's a whole chapter in the book about unwrapping your gifts. We all have talents. We all have abilities. We all have a mind, and we have time.
Right.
And my sense about you is you're trying to get it all in. I've had a wonderful life. I'm grateful for that. And now I want to share. I mean, there's just no better place to be in life than to want to make life better for somebody else. It wasn't all just to be a clinical psychologist with a fancy title. Now, how can I be of impact? How can I take a part of me to help somebody who's looking but not quite seeing?
Right.
Someone who is capable but not exercising their capacity. You know, someone who is hearing but not listening. And so I think what you do on your podcast and what we try to do on our Why Not Win sessions is to fill that gap, because there's so much more to all of us, but we have to believe it. And to your point, to get past the fear, and more than anything else, the fear of failure. It seems to me, Dana, that we get it when it comes to learning how to walk. You know, do you have children, Dana?
I do. I have two adult children.
Two adult children. Well, let's go back to when you're son or your daughter was learning to walk. Did they fall one or two times, or did they fall more than that?
Yeah, only all the time.
I think it was more like 25, 30, 50 times.
At least.
Not one time did you ever say, you know what? Give me your son or daughter's name. Give me a name.
Aaron or Sean, either one.
Aaron?
Yeah.
All right, so you never said, you know, Aaron has fallen 10 times, honey. She's having a tough go at this walking thing. Why don't we just get a wheelchair and some braces for her?
Yeah. You know? Well, that's absurd.
But not once did you do that. You always stood them back up, come until you got it right. We get it when it comes to skating. We get it when it comes to riding a bike. But for some reason, after those three, we start to get afraid of failure, and that's so unfortunate.
It really is quite sad, because I'll tell you, I was having a conversation with my wife recently, and she said, is there anything you regret about the way that we raised our kids? And my response was, yeah, I feel really badly that we did not let them fail enough. Because we don't learn anything from success other than that momentary feeling of joy. But what we really do learn from is pain and adversity. Yep. And so, because I live in Santa Barbara. It's a very prosperous community, lots of incredible wealth. And so, most of the parents that we come in contact with are all, you know, they push their kids pretty hard, but they don't let them fail. And I think that not letting children fail and recognize how much resourcefulness they may have, and that nobody gets a life without pain, and it's really picking your butt off the floor and moving forward that teaches you how to be a really successful person. And so, yeah, I feel bad. Luckily my kids are successful and they're doing well, but I still feel like we didn't do them the greatest favor in the world by giving them a trophy when they came in fourth place, if you know what I mean. Because back in those days, everybody got a trophy because we were so afraid of damaging their fragile self-esteem, right? It was not a very smart way to parent children, as far as I'm concerned.
Well, I share some of your thinking. And it's difficult, though, because it was very difficult for me to enjoy my success without my children enjoying my success.
Do they work with you?
And so how do you differentiate between my success and your success? And that's not an easy transition all the time.
Do your kids work with you, Larry?
I have a son that works with me. I have three kids. All three learned the business. I insisted that they learn the business because, you know, you never know what could happen on a timely basis. But I think it kind of demonstrated to both my daughters exactly what they did not want to do. And with my son, he's never done anything else but McDonald's. He was 10 years old when we opened the first restaurant. He was the playground manager at 10 years old.
That is so sweet.
Getting him involved in the business. And he went on to go to school locally, graduated, had the good sense to get a degree in business, not like his dad. And so he graduated, went right into the owner's program. And Dana, I couldn't be more proud of him. He became the youngest franchisee in the system to own a McDonald's at 25 years old.
Oh, my goodness. Congratulations to him. That's
so
amazing.
He's kind of running the business now, the restaurants that we have, while his daddy goes out and plays with his book.
Right. So Larry, I do have a question for you. It's not necessarily a psychological one, but in the community that I live in, there are not enough people willing to go to work to satisfy the need. We have a very low unemployment rate, but we also have a ton of businesses that can't find employees. And I'm wondering if that's something that you face in your business. Can you easily find people that are willing to work hard?
Not at all. It's gotten better. I think COVID kind of offered up, if you will, kind of the perfect storm. I say that in quotes. A lot of our employees are women. And so when schools were down, moms had to stay home and keep the kids.
Oh, okay.
There were so many people who found work online, went into little private businesses.
Right.
I think Uber and some of those opportunities provided. And so we've just not been right since.
Wow.
It takes about 230 employees to do our stores. all of our restaurants, with the exception of one, all of them are 24 hours. That's almost unheard of today. People are trying to staff just for the just for the daily hours.
Right.
But we like to think that our approach and relationship building that we do, that we can do a better job of staffing. So we don't open late so much or close early.
What
gets me is that we can't get the full staff. In other words, I might walk into a restaurant on a $1,200 hour, lunch hour. But I know the history of that restaurant. It should have been $1,500,
$1,600
if I had two more people or three more people.
Yeah.
So it affects your ability to get the customers through.
Right.
And you're right, that's everywhere.
Yeah, I just got back from Hawaii with my family. I hadn't been on vacation since before COVID. And I would say that every single retail store was dying for employees. And most of the restaurants did not have enough staff. And they were closing 2 or 3 days a week because they just couldn't get enough people to and there were lines out the door because there wasn't enough staff to work. It's really a very sad state of affairs. I know we're getting a little bit off topic here, but
Good stuff, though.
It's important.
Absolutely.
So, Larry, we got about 15 minutes left. I really would love to know about the Why Not Win Institute in more detail, if you're willing to share that with my listeners.
Absolutely. So I write the manuscript, and I asked this lady by the name of Dr. Zella Fluker, a very good friend. She's in secondary education, and she wrote a beautiful introduction, I thought, and she wrote it through the eyes of a piece of my artwork, very creatively done, I thought. But when she comes back to me, she says to me, Larry, I think we have something here. And I'm thinking, okay. She said, I have extracted over 130 quotes from your manuscript. And she has subsequently written a curriculum from that. And as I said, we've been on 35, close to 40 college campuses now, capturing those tenets that we think will lead to a winning experience. I think you would agree with me, being a clinical psychologist, that when you change what you think, you change what you do. And we are having a wonderful time seeking to augment the thinking, just the adjustment, understanding that there's no substitution for hard work.
Right.
You got to put the work in. You can't go around it, over it, find a crack and slip through. I think it was Edison who said, and I love that quote, most people miss their opportunity in life for no other reason than the opportunity is dressed in overalls and it looks like work. and we've seen so many examples of that. Great opportunity, but if I've got to work for it, thank you, but no thank you. Yeah. And so once you understand that, I think you opened up by saying this, and I thought it was so appropriate. I was doing a bank run, or my back office lady was doing a bank run, and she always catches these catchphrases. And it's so important for your listeners to get this. The quote said this, be kind, K-I-N-D, .. For everyone you meet is involved in a great struggle. So she called me back to tell me that line, and I'm thinking, you know, wow, what a beautiful statement. I began to feel differently, Dana, after dissecting the reality of that. It's very important. Can't tell you the number of your past patients, some family members today, friends, who feel that Dana has succeeded beyond all struggles. I get it all the time, but that statement is so all-inclusive and holistic in nature for everyone you meet, not involved in some little situation, but a great struggle. That's good to know that we're all in this boat together, trying to make the best of it. But if you're of the opinion, like so many of my employees, who think that Mr. Thornton doesn't have any struggles, look at him, you know? He's not, and nothing could be farther from the truth. So we love being plain and simple and down to earth so that we're approachable and we can talk about some of the variances and challenges that we still have in the business today.
Right.
So we love that piece. And now we've got the graphic novel. We did all 8 high schools in Birmingham. The superintendent bought 2,800 books of these books and have already committed to 1,500 for the 7th graders.
Wow.
They spent 9 weeks with this book with their 10th graders, and we never knew that the messaging could resonate to a group that small. Great. So I'm so excited that we just closed the deal in Montgomery, Alabama, my home, where I integrated schools. We're going to go and do all 9 of those schools. And we have a sponsor that volunteered to do 3,000 books, and they will do a study, and I'll get to go down to my alma mater high school at the very school that I integrated, Goodwin. So I'm so excited about that full circle opportunity to go back and make a difference with those schools. But yeah, here's a challenge that we have. I'll share this with you. The corporate community is just about to usurp the position of the collegiate space because they too are wanting to get their employees to the next level. How can we win? And Dana, winning has more to do with the individual than it does the corporation. And I think that is the differentiating factor between what we provide and other folk who bring in these workshops and institutes. We put the responsibility on the individual more and more, changing what people think and understanding their own individual roles in their growth and development. That's a huge piece. And I can't tell you how many of my employees will work for me for 3 or 4 weeks, 3 or 4 months, leave mad at the manager, mad at me and my son, and then they'll go across the street, pack up all of their problems, go across the street and repeat over and over again and never stop to think, how many times did I thank the customer and ask for repeat business?
Right.
How many times did I call in when I really could have come to work? How many times did my grandmother die? Most people only have 2 grandmothers. And so we play those games, and the joke ends up, Dana, being on ourselves. But we think that we augment that. We break right into that and help you to understand the value of time. Until you can manage time, you can manage nothing else. And we bring those to the forefront so that the person has little to no choice but to look at me more. To say, I have a role in this. Believe it or not, there are a lot of people who live and work and never think of their own role in the process of their own growth and development. My employees and yours or anyone else's has way more to do with their growth and upward mobility than you or I ever did.
That's for sure.
For sure. And I can just give you classic examples of that. If I walk in a restaurant and I see outstanding service 2-3 times from the same individual, well, I'm calling that person over to introduce myself, to talk to the manager. Are we taking care of this person?
Right.
You know, and I've done that over and over and over again. I didn't do that. They did that. But a lot of people are not aware of that, believe it or not.
So, Larry, how do we clone you?
I would love to figure the same thing.
Because we need a Larry Thornton in Santa Barbara and all of California and probably every state in the union because.
Well, I will tell you, Dana, that I've not had so much fun ever in my life. I thought it was going to all be about teaching, and I thought it was all going to be about Coca-Cola. I thought it was going to all be about McDonald's. But everything that I've done led me to this. I don't make a dime here, but I'm having the time of my life every single day.
So, Larry, I have a really important question for you that we've not talked about. You appear to be a man of faith. Is that a fair statement for me to make?
That's a safe statement for you to make.
Okay. I say that not necessarily in a religious way, or I mean, I don't have any idea of how you express your faith, but you appear to be a man who has tremendous faith. Is that a fair statement?
I think that's a fair statement. I think I say this in one of my presentations, and I believe it with all of my heart. We are a part of a universal reality. Gravity is a part of that universe, which says that any individual, whether you are Mormon, Jewish, whether you are, or if you have no faith, if you step off of a 10-story building, it's not going to end well. That's universal.
Yeah.
If you're riding down the interstate at 80 miles an hour, doesn't matter what your faith is, or if you have no faith, if you take an immediate right, that is why interstates curve, they don't turn.
Right.
Physics will take over. Well, then I believe this, the one seed of corn that my granddad would plant in the earth, or I like to use the term invest in the earth, because it's not just the planting. You've got to go back to the field, and you have to chop the weeds, and you have to fight the bugs, because the weeds will take the nutrition, the of value from the corn, and you'll get a ill-deformed cob of corn. And in the 98-degree heat, and I watch him smelling the mule. But if he went to the field every day, he's not going to get corn next week or next month. But in late July, if he went to the field every day, that one kernel of corn would yield for him, Dana, an entire stalk of corn.
Wow.
Each stalk bearing 2 to 3 ears of corn. Each ear bearing 550, I counted them, 550 to 600 kernels on a healthy cob of corn.
Wow.
Dana, that is a tremendous ROI.
Yeah, I would say.
Return on our investment.
Right.
Now, where am I getting to? That is the compounding effect and return of the universe. When we invest well into the universe, kindness, forgiveness, mercy, integrity, patience, honesty, there's a compounding return, just like the corn. It's universal. And so when people say to me today, golly, man, how do you own 7 restaurants? You don't even have a degree in business, and you're on corporate boards, and you're an author now, and you're a painter. How did you do all of that? It's having invested, Dana, well into the universe. And to now, I'm just reaping those returns. It is so simple, so basic, it's biblical. But what we're trying to do is to reach those individuals who might not be able to get it through the traditional Orthodox religion.
Right.
What we're talking about is every single day loving, living, and caring for people and building relationships so that other people. Did you know that, Dana, that most people work, I mean, nose down to the grind, doing the work much harder than they otherwise would have to? If they could take a commensurate amount of that time and lift up just 15% and recognize people, invite them into your sphere of influence, and you'll watch how other people can much more expeditiously get you to your end goal than you ever could do alone. But we don't build relationships. We don't service relationships. And you know why we don't do that? It's because somebody is too black or too white or too tall, too short, too dumb, too right. smart. You know, all of those things. And we close people out, and we don't realize that simultaneously we're closing ourselves in, and we hurt ourselves in the process.
Larry, you are a very, very bright man. I am just blown away by, I mean, it's incredibly inspirational what you're saying. Do you, I mean, I'm assuming I'm not the only person that's ever said that to you.
Well, I appreciate that because it gives me strength and comfort, because when we go out, those are the things that we're talking about. And you wouldn't believe the corporations now that are calling us to be a part of their program. In fact, Coca-Cola has just integrated us into their continuing. We have, 6 states that we're in.
Wow.
That's going to keep us busy beyond what we can imagine. So we've got to create a way to get some scale in what we do.
Right.
Then I will tell you that I wouldn't trade 1 minute of what I do at all. And the pay, I mean, I'm grateful that I don't have to depend on that. But listen, I
right.
love this opportunity
sure.
To give back and to do what Ms. Nichols did for me.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, I think that most successful people have had people that have inspired them. Mm-hmm. That would come in a certain moment in life where we really need that inspiration. And having mentors is really, really important. When I look back at the people that have mentored me, I'm a very fortunate man. I think that, like you say, having gratitude is extremely important, to recognize how blessed a lot of us are. And, you know, I've not had the easiest life in the world. And nobody gets a life without pain, but you know, it's how you choose to face it and how you dig into your resourcefulness and do whatever you can to survive and move forward and not let the fear of something else bad happening stop you from, you know, achieving your goals. So everything that you're saying is so important. And it's been such a pleasure to have you on my podcast, because you're just the kind of guy that I'm looking for in inspiring people to not give up and work as hard as they can, and recognize usually the harder you work, the more successful you are. And I know that sounds really simple, But I'm not sure why most people don't get that. You know, when
did you ever hear that Jefferson quote? It's very similar to that. He says that my good luck has always been in direct proportion to my hard work.
Right.
The harder I work, the luckier I am.
Yeah. You know, when couples come to see me for marriage counseling, as an example, they think that there's something wrong with their relationship if they have to work on it. And I say to them, well, when you go to work, do you work or do you just sit at your desk all day long? And they look at me like I'm nuts. Well, of course I work.
Oh, yeah.
And I said, that's because you have the expectation that work takes work. Well, what if you change your expectation and realize that a relationship takes more work than anything? But you don't have to look at it as being a problem. It's learning how to love somebody in a way that helps them feel like they're seen and heard and respected. And that if you're not willing to do that kind of work, there's no way you can have a successful relationship.
Well, what you've done, sir, is you turned the problem around to say, you know, you have a role in the success of your marriage.
Right.
I mean, that's right. All you're changing what you think.
Right.
You change what you do. And Dana, I so admire you. You found a way to reach the masses. You've got so much to say. I can just sense and feel your level of humility. That's where it really all starts, gratitude and humility. Once you can have that as your springboard, the rest of it tends to fall in place. It's been promised to us through Scripture,
right.
You know, that we, and those persons, I can tell you all kinds of sad stories of people who try, my detractors, if you will. You've had some, I've had some.
Sure.
Isn't it amazing how, you know, I think the book of Psalms, David talks about thine enemy becoming thy footstool. Now, you and I would just be happy to just remove my enemy out of my way so I can get on. But, you know, the Scripture says, no, that's not enough. Not only will I remove him from your path, I will lay him down so as to give you a leg up to get to where I have ordained you to go. That's powerful.
Right.
And I've seen it over and over and over again. Those individuals who meant you the most harm, I can point to 3 or 5 who brought some of the best blessings my way, you know, and right. That was never their intent.
Larry, I can't even tell you how much I appreciate you coming on the podcast. You are truly an inspiration.
Man.
It's been really fun talking with you. If you ever find yourself in California, I would love to meet you. Santa Barbara is a lovely place to go on vacation, but it sounds like you're so busy. Vacation is not even part of the picture most of the time.
All right. I've got your connect. Okay. And the young lady who's an AI digital artist, we're going to be doing some artwork, and she's helping us through the Institute. So you might end up seeing Larry Thornton in Santa Barbara. So I'd love to say hello to you too. Well, and keep doing what you're doing to reach so many people because it's healing and it's helpful.
Thank you. Before you go, if somebody wants to reach out to you, what's the best way for them to reach you?
Yeah. Do you have an email address on me? My page is LarryThornton.com.
Okay.
So Larry Thornton, that's my page. So that's one way. I'm on Facebook and LinkedIn, that kind of thing.
Okay.
It's there. But yeah, share whatever you have on me if someone's interested.
Because
we're in the business of just giving and sharing. I'll give you back now.
Very good. Okay.
We appreciate our listeners and are interested in your comments and suggestions. Feel free to email us at fearmeoutpodcast@gmail.com. If you are interested in becoming a sponsor for this podcast, please email us at fearmeoutpodcast@gmail.com. Thank you for listening. See you next time.